I would say the first part is knowledge and the second part is behavior. Because to really be financially literate, it doesn't just mean that you pass a test about the knowledge around basic things like banking and budgeting and investing and taxes. You could know all of those things, like, you know, the back of your hand. You could have it memorized and get an A on a test about money. But when you don't actually use that in your behaviors with your money and execute on it, then you're not financially literate. You just have memorized a bunch of information that you're not using. So to me, truly being financially literate means you have knowledge about the basics of personal finances and money management, and you are now using that for your financial behaviors to execute on that knowledge and set yourself up in a way where you can thrive financially.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the None of Your Business podcast. Sean and Lacey with you, just as we are each and every Wednesday. Well, it depends when you're listening to this, but we drop the episodes on Wednesdays. super excited because this, the month of July for us, is a month of money. Well, one, it could be mean a month of abundance, a month of sales, but really we have a big focus on money, money mindset, money literacy, which we're going to talk about today, understanding how money works and how that affects your relationship, you know, your relationship with money, how that affects your relationships with other people in business, your prospects, your clients, but also in your personal life, your relationships. When we talk about knowledge of how money works and how you can get money to work for you, especially as an entrepreneur. How do we leverage money? We talk a lot about how money is a tool. And we are so blessed today to have a guest with us that has really championed this cause, like picked up the flag and is all about not just entrepreneurs. So now I feel like a little small because I want entrepreneurs to understand this. Our guest today wants every single person to understand how money works, to beef up their money literacy. And in fact, on the social level, champions a cause to have every high school student,
yes,
be required to take a course, a class in financial literacy
before they graduate.
Now, how great is that? Because no matter what you go into, I mean, well, money we talk is about what this, makes the world go
and
around.
We talk about this all the time, you know, as entrepreneurs, as business owners, service providers, you're taught your trade or your craft, and you're never taught anything about business. And one of the major things that people struggle with that we see all the time is their mindset and understanding around money. I mean, it's such a big hang up and can actually make or break a business owner. So
we just
had
a brief conversation leading into this, and I'm already thinking like, well, man, how small thinking is that? Because what if you were just going into any job in the world? Like, I think about our clients and how they struggle. And, you know, a lot of them have big businesses.
But their employees struggle. Businesses. Yeah, everybody struggles.
So then, everybody struggles with this. This is going to be a fantastic episode. Slow it down. Take us off of 2X speed. You're going to want to pay attention and take notes today. Our guest is Janely Espinal. Welcome, Janely.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for this conversation. Just off of you two going off of that riff there, I'm like, yes, I'm so in tune. I'm ready.
We start off every single podcast with the same question for our guests. And it's super applicable and super important today because when you bring on somebody, you know, and you get going and you're talking to us about financial literacy, it's easy for a listener or a viewer to fall into the trap of thinking, well, you know, of course, Janely, you must be like a financial advisor. You probably grew up, you know, in the financial space.
Your parents taught you everything you needed to know about money before you even graduated.
Easy for you to say, you're just teaching us all these things, and now I feel stupid because I don't know them. But what we have found is that our guests usually have a very interesting story about how they came into this area of expertise. And so I'd love to start with you telling us a little bit about how did you get so passionate about this? Where did you cut your teeth and learn all of the things that you're teaching the world today?
Yes. Okay. So for me, it started with feeling a little bit of like a sense of injustice. Like I felt like it was unfair that I had not been taught how to manage money. Because when I went through school, I was that type of kid who was always a straight A kid. I got good grades in school. I was always a teacher's pet. I wanted to make my parents proud. I have immigrant parents from Dominican Republic. So they grew up, you know, very poor. They didn't get a chance to go to school. So being, you know, raised in a household with them, they were constantly telling us education is everything. We didn't get to go to school. So when you're in school, you have to really take advantage of it, learn, focus, immerse yourself. And so that's what I did. I wanted to make them proud, but somehow I still ended up graduating college with $20,000 of credit card debt, even though I got a full scholarship to college, which covered my room and board, you know, my tuition and my meals. I still didn't have money to cover things like my laptop and my textbooks and school supplies and how to decorate my dorm and clothes and shoes and, you know, hanging out. So I would put all of that on credit cards because I never understood how a credit card works, how interest compounds, and how that can really, you know, bite you in the butt if you're not paying attention to that growing interest. And it really kind of got to a point where I finally sat down and I looked over all my money, my statements, my account, and I was like crying because I'm like, I work so hard to not be in the struggle that mommy and papi have experienced. And yet here I am in the same struggle. It almost like doesn't make sense. And so I started thinking, I'm like, I'm always that straight A kid. I always followed the rules and did the right thing. If I had gotten a class about money in school, I would have gotten an A. So why didn't they teach me how taxes work? I'm required to pay taxes, but I'm not required to learn about how taxes work. It didn't make sense. I started to feel this like, this is not fair. This is like an injustice. And instead of being mad and pointing at the world, I was like, you know what? I'm going to funnel this. I'm going to take it, this anger, this frustration, and I'm going to fuel this to teaching myself, getting myself out of this debt, and then making sure everybody that I can reach understands the basics of financial literacy so that they don't repeat all those mistakes that, you know, that I made with my money early on.
Gosh, that's so interesting. And my story is a little bit different because I hadn't learned anything about money and my parents didn't teach me about money. I'd never spent any money and I didn't have a credit card until I was way too old and didn't have any credit and got denied for everything. And it was also the same thing though. I was so infuriated with this idea of nobody told me that I should actually get a credit card and be responsible with how I utilize it so that I can get opportunity later on in life. And so, man, I'm in alignment with your passion and this desire to teach people at a young age. So my number one question for you is, what do you see most often occur from the lack of financial literacy that's taught? Like what pitfalls do people fall into because they have no understanding?
Oh, yes. Okay. So the first thing is constant spending with no understanding of their cash flow, which usually leads to overspending. So people have no way to track the dollars coming in and the dollars going out. And so they're just spending without really thinking about it. It's kind of like this mindless thing. You see what you want, you buy it. You think, oh, I need this, I buy it. And there's really no tracking system. And when you don't, you know, track something, then there's no way for you to measure it. The only way you can measure something is by tracking it. And then you look and see, am I getting closer to where I want to be or not? And so if you want to measure where you are financially and have a good, you know, gauge of like, am I reaching my financial goals? Am I close to where I need to be? Am I better today than I was yesterday? The only way to answer those types of questions and do like a real assessment is to look at your data, to look at a budget, to look at your spending, to look at your cash flow. So I think when you don't have financial literacy, you don't think about money coming in and money going out. You just do. It's like it's always action without thinking, reflection, or planning. And when that happens, it leads people to spend more than they have, which then means that they need to borrow to make do. And it means people end up in a lot of debt because they fundamentally didn't understand some basic principles about knowing your, you know, your budget, being able to see what's coming in and what's coming out and living within your means.
So I have a two-part question for you. First part, super easy. Second part, hard. First part, we keep talking about financial literacy. Yeah. What do you mean by that? Like if I were to that. Say that, hey, I'm like, how do I know if I have financial literacy? What do we want to accomplish by having people achieve financial literacy?
Yeah. So for me, it's two part. I would say the first part is knowledge and the second part is behavior. Because to really be financially literate, it doesn't just mean that you pass a test about the knowledge around basic things like banking and budgeting and investing and taxes. You could know all of those things, like, you know, the back of your hand. You could have it memorized and get an A on a test about money. But when you don't actually use that in your behaviors with your money and execute on it, then you're not financially literate. You just have memorized a bunch of information that you're not using. So to me, truly being financially literate means you have knowledge about the basics of personal finances and money management, and you are now using that for your financial behaviors to execute on that knowledge and set yourself up in a way where you can thrive financially.
Second part of that, harder. I believe that one of the and this is just a personal opinion, you are more than welcome on our podcast to say, absolutely not. You guys are nuts.
Wait, let me hear it.
I believe that one of the sort of underlying issues is that we as a population, I mean a global population, are being separated from our money through what you're talking about. A lack of knowledge.
Right.
I would even roll it back even one step further. I would say it starts with math. I'm a big proponent of all wealthy people that I've ever met in my life are really good at math. They can do math in their heads. As long as I cannot do math, as long as I don't understand compound interest, as long as I don't understand how things work, then I will be eternally separated from my money, which means that I have no choice other than just get a job, get a direct deposit, spend
until
there's no more money there, wait till the next check, get the deposit, right? And figure this out, which is why I'm so interested in the social element of you saying, listen, we have to teach people. I'm wondering if you, one, agree with that. And I'm wondering if there's a degree of resistance that you've encountered from people saying, listen, Jen Haley, we don't want to teach people how to be in touch with their finances because knowledge, after all, is power.
Yes. Well, 100% agree with you. And I can actually tell you there's anecdotal data to support it just in my work. So I'll go into high schools and middle schools and I see students who they have never had the experience in math where they feel confident. So one simple example would be negative numbers, right? So anything below zero is like the concept is so it's impossible for them to wrap their minds around negative numbers. Like they just can't get it. And when they sit down in the classroom and do financial literacy activities and they have to make a budget, somehow the negative numbers clicks. Oh, I have spent, I'm below zero in my bank account. I overdrew my account. I spent more than I had. I have now less than $0 in my bank account. So it's so funny that you bring that up because I see financial literacy as a way to bridge and fill in all those holes and gaps that happens for students in a lot of these academic content areas that are required. We have to take algebra. We have to take biology. We have to take all of these specific classes, you know, even, for example, English language arts, reading and writing. We have to take these classes. But when you make a student who doesn't like to read, when you make them read about money, they light up. When you make them write about money, they get excited to write about that. Right? When you have them understand math concepts like negative numbers or percentages or decimals or fractions with examples that are money examples and money stories, it's a different type of experience. So I feel like, yes, 100%, a way to bridge the gap between a lot of these content areas, specifically math and money, is to teach financial literacy as a way to kind of bring all the disciplines together, because that's what happens in a financial literacy class. You're reading about money, you're writing about money, you're doing math problems about money, your critical thinking skills are getting sharpened because you have to analyze and compare and contrast, and you have to really look at data and say, like, okay, now what should I do? There's no one right answer. You might approach your financial issue this way. I might have that same financial issue and I might approach it that way, and we both solve our problems. We just do it differently. And that's the beauty of, you know, teaching students money management and financial thinking skills, is that they can see that there's many ways to problem solve, especially when it comes to, you know, financial case studies. So definitely I'm with you. Now, in terms of the resistance, I'm going to be honest. The only way that we really face resistance when I'm advocating for financial education work is when folks are saying we don't agree with how it's happening. I have not yet come to a place, a room, a meeting, a legislator, a leader in education that says, we don't want financial literacy taught in the schools. Everyone wants it to happen, but the details of the bill, the language of how it gets done, that's when people disagree. So is it going to be freshman year, sophomore year? Is it going to be junior year, senior year? Is it going to be in the math department or does it count for social studies credit? Is it going to be its own standards or are we going to use the standards from the national level to teach it? How many credits do you get? A half a credit, a full year credit? Which teachers are going to teach it? And what certifications or licensures do the teachers need to teach this class? Can any teacher teach it or does only economics, math teachers can teach it? And then you start to get into like these nitty gritty, you know, problems that you have. Maybe the principals association maybe thinks one thing. Maybe the teachers union thinks another thing. Maybe the senators and representatives have this opinion. Then parents have that opinion. And then, you know, you have the students themselves who want things to look a certain way. So when you have so many different stakeholders involved in this issue, that's kind of when it's like, oh, our problem is we need to find a way to get everyone to agree in order for this bill to move forward. We all agree on the financial needs to happen part, but the details and how it happens and when it happens and who does it, and that's where we tend to disagree.
So I want to roll it back just a little bit because you were talking about, and this is fascinating to me, your definition of financial literacy is the knowledge and then the application of that knowledge, the behavior that's executed once they know. So I could be a high school student and I can go to a class and I could even fall in love with a subject per se. And I can learn all that information. And then maybe I get out into the real world and it was just information. I don't apply it. So there's, and listen, there's people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s that have no financial literacy. So yeah. How do we bridge the gap between the knowledge and the behavior? Like, what are some things that you see need to happen in order for that to play out so people can actually...
Well, a lot of high school students might not have jobs yet, might not be managing money.
Yeah, so they kind of like put that stuff away.
It sounds good, but I don't get to practice it.
And then, and then 4 years later, it's like, oh, I forgot about all that stuff that I learned.
I'm in college.
Right, so how do we bridge that gap for people? Yeah.
I love this question. So the research shows one thing, and then I have my opinion, which is another thing. So I'll talk about both. So the research, which... So I work with an organization called Next Gen Personal Finance, NGPF. It's a nonprofit that is championing a lot of financial curriculum for free for teachers, because the main issue that a lot of schools have is that they don't have the budget to buy curriculum and materials to teach this class. And then they also don't have the budget to train the teachers. You have to like pay for the teachers to go and get the professional development training. So to solve that problem of saying, there's a lot of underfunded schools that just don't have the money to do this. This organization said, we're going to offer it for free. So there's free curriculum, free teacher training. And so I got involved with the organization in 2018 through doing teacher training with them. So I started offering teacher training and doing, you know, these camps around the country where we would get teachers together and show them the curriculum, show them how to use it, tell them it's free. You can start using this tomorrow with your students, which is all amazing. But the data shows that if the teachers have the knowledge and they have the curriculum and they go and teach it to students at the wrong time, then the students won't get it just in time to apply it. So the research that shows it's just in time is when it's taught at the age that students are making the most financial decisions that they'll make in an academic setting or, you know, in a school environment. So right before they turn 18, that's when they're making all the most financial decisions that they're going to make, such as if they're 16 and they're getting a driver's license, they're going to have to think about buying a car and car insurance. If they're not, like me, I grew up in New York City and Brooklyn. I still to this day don't have my driver's license because we take the subway everywhere. We don't have a car. You know, some people have cars, but it's a luxury in New York City. So for me, I wouldn't have really learned about car insurance or buying a car. But I definitely would have been learning about FAFSA, which is the free application for federal student aid, because I was applying to college. I needed to understand the paperwork that I needed to do that application, my parents' income tax statements, and all the information to enter to see how much aid are you going to get for college. Because if you don't get enough, you're going to have to start thinking about student loans or applying for more scholarships and grants. So paying for college is so important to teach. Understanding taxes, if you have a job as a teenager, you're gonna be seeing those taxes coming out of your paycheck. It might not feel good, but it's something that you're gonna experience no matter whether you like it or not. So teaching students the basics at the time when they're at an age where they can apply it or they're most likely to apply it, it needs to happen in the upper grades in high school. So that would be junior year and senior year. This is when students are 17 years old, 18 years old, some 16 years old too. But that's really when they're thinking about these decisions more closely than really at any other age. Because when you're 13 and 14 years old, I mean, I'm sorry, you're not thinking about your own financial autonomy. You're thinking about what's mommy and papi going to tell me? Can I get this or not? You know, if I ask for Christmas, can I get this? Are they going to buy it for me? It's really, you're dependent so much at that point still. So a little bit more independence occurs when you're junior and senior. You start thinking about, what am I doing after high school? Am I going to go to college or not? And if not, how am I going to make money? So it's funny that the decisions you have to make at 18 are revolving around money. Mm-hmm. But we don't teach, we're not teaching them how to think about money. So I really do think that we have to look at that research carefully and use that research to make the case for financial literacy to be required in the upper grades in high school, which is a lot of the work that I've been doing since 2018 to now. And then the second piece for me is, to your point, Sean, you said, you know, a lot of students, they don't work in the high school level. And that's true. Many students don't work. And so for those students, it's so important for us to lean into simulations. This has to be game-based simulated learning, because a lot of times they're not going to go and get a paycheck and earn the money and understand how to invest it or how to save it or which accounts to open. So we're going to have to provide them with simulations and game-based learning to engage them and get them to understand. You know, there's a funny, there's a TikTok and Instagram family right now going viral. I think her name is the Ariel B. And she's a mom of five kids, and she's sitting with them at the table every night doing activities around money. She'll tell them, okay, this is how much you make. You need to have a car. You need to pay your rent. You need to buy your groceries, all these things. And it's so funny. Every day you see another TikTok or another Instagram reel going viral of this family, because the kids are like, mom, how am I supposed to pay for my car? Then I'm not gonna have money for groceries. And all my taxes took all my money from my check. And it's so funny, because these are the lessons that make the money seem not like an abstract thing. It makes it less abstracted. It makes it feel real, even if there's not their own real money yet. So those are the two things I would say. It has to be at the right time, and it has to be using simulations if the students themselves are not earning their own money just yet.
Love that. Well, this is super helpful. I now know why they call her Miss B Helpful.
That's right.
That's the website, www.missbhelpful.com. Janelle has a book, Mind Your Money. I want to encourage everybody to jump on Amazon and pick up a copy. You know, all of this is super fantastic. I want to ask you a couple things, maybe might be inside, might be outside what you normally talk about. Let's talk about generational differences. So you have older people, the older generations, you know, probably if they're listening are like, well, nobody taught me all this stuff. And, you know,
I had to learn it all.
Younger kids today, they don't get it. They just don't get it. But one of the things that we do realize is that there are generational differences. And, you know, the Gen Z look at and understand and leverage money very differently than, say, a boomer or a millennial even. Looking at that generational difference, what kind of differences have you seen is the first one. Second point is, we've talked a lot about educating in high school. I am the chair of the board of Sherman Chiropractic College. This is a professional trade university. Yeah. Graduating with a degree in chiropractic, you're going to owe in student loans upwards of $200,000 to $300,000. One of the issues that we face is that is fantasy money.
Right.
I never actually touched it.
It's just in the ethers, right?
Probably
it's
like digitally signed something and then I never even had it. I signed this thing and then somebody else got it.
So it doesn't feel real.
But I'm on the hook to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to explain to somebody, you know, you're 24, 25 years old. You owe $300,000. Most adults don't owe that on their mortgage.
Right.
And they have a home. Is there anything to extending this into the university level? Because student loan debt is a big thing, even nationally.
Yes.
Even the idea of forgiving it and the argument against forgiving it is, which you acquired it. Like you didn't realize when you were signing up for it, and this is just poor management.
You raised your hand and said, I want this, right?
And so I would love to hear your thoughts on that. Generations and extending this into the university system as well, where we're dealing with big numbers And we're really putting some of these young adults into a lot of debt.
Oh, yes, we are. And I totally hear that. So, okay. So for the first piece about the generational shift, the number one generational shift is with the younger generations. The younger you are, the more likely you are to be mobile first with your money, all of your money. So banking, budgeting, you're going to use an online bank or a fintech app to do your banking. You are going to, if you ever get a paper check, which most don't, but if you do ever get one, you're going to take a picture of it and deposit it right on your phone. You're not going to go to a bank branch. That's just not going to happen. When it comes to budgeting, you're going to have a budgeting app on your phone. Most likely it's going to tell you when you're spending too close to your budget for that category, or it's going to send you notifications, right, about your spending. Here's an overview of what you spent this week. Take a look at the app. It's going to make a little pie chart for you. So you're not, you know, necessarily having that hands-on experience, making your budget, going through your spending, looking at every category, because a lot of this is being done for you. It's being automated through mobile apps and technology. Investing. If you are getting started investing, most likely you're using a trading app or an investment, a micro-investing app or a robo-advising app. So the shift when it comes to money generationally, really it's just the way that we're doing it is digital first, mobile phone first, and in a way that we are less reliant on our brain and our hands to actually do the work, because the tools and the technology is doing the work for us. And that has pros, but also has a lot of cons, right? Because now we are not feeling like we have to learn these skills or be able to do this manually, because what's the point? I have these tools to do it for me. My phone can just tell me. I don't have to run the numbers. And that's actually making us more dependent than independent when it comes to finances. So there's a danger there. We want to leverage the tools and utilize them and help us make our finances more convenient without sacrificing our knowledge and our actions and the ability for us to actually be independent with or without those tools around. So that's the key, which I think makes it really tough, because, you know, when you're teaching students in a school building, you know, you can't tell them, okay, everybody go download this app. Like, you can't do that. You have to teach them oftentimes using textbooks or online programs. So that's why I say simulations are so important, because it allows you to get the experience of it being real without it being real, and also allows you to leverage technology, which is probably the top way most of these younger students are going to be interacting with money and bank accounts. It's going to be through a tech tool. It's not going to be a physical bank or credit union, which I think older generations are more comfortable walking to the bank to talk to someone at the branch. Younger generations don't want to talk to anybody. They'll do anything besides talk to someone. They want to chat with a bot first before they talk to a person. So we have to really understand that shift and figure out how to work with them. And that also means they're more trusting of things that can be more risky, which is a key thing. We have to start teaching them how to properly assess the risk of something, especially a tech tool or a service or product online that has to do with your finances. There's so many younger customers that are just more willing to sign up for an app or platform without really doing their due diligence to find out what is the security measures like. Is this actually trustworthy? What does the Better Business Bureau have to say about this business? You know what, online, let me look and see if the SEC has anything against this investment app. Like, they're not doing all of that, because it's just normal to them to have so many apps on their phones and to just be putting money in different places. So it's more important as educators for us to really teach them about, you know, being smart, being a really smart consumer on the internet in a digital age. And then I think when it comes to college, I am 100% for it. I know that I needed this when I was in college, because that was the time when I felt the most pressure to like be cool. Like, I was bullied a little bit in middle school, but I feel like it didn't really affect me so much, because I was like focusing on school, you know, versus in college, a lot of students get caught up in the lifestyle, the partying, the hanging out, being cool, you know, having a crush on this person or that person. It's like the social aspects of being in your 20s are so heightened versus younger ages of your life or younger phases. So I definitely think that financial education in college is critical. The tricky part of that, though, is that every college or university sort of functions in a silo. And so it's very difficult to wave a magic wand and get all colleges or universities to do something the same or similarly, versus at the high school level, you can actually go state by state and have laws passed, which is what we've been doing for the past few years, is championing bills that propose a requirement for every public high school in that state. And if you can do that in all 50 states, you know, then boom, you now have a country that every single state is required to provide that financial education before high school graduation. The other piece of the college side of it is not everybody goes to college. So now you're missing, you know, you're not casting the widest net. If you do it in college instead of high school, what about all the kids that exit high school and don't go on to college? They choose an alternative pathway. And that's becoming more and more popular nowadays. So then we miss them. They you know, miss the boat, and they don't get the financial education that they need, arguably maybe even a little bit more than the ones going to college, because you, over the course of your life, data shows that you tend to make $1 million on average over the course of your career with a college degree than just with a high school diploma. Now, of course, that's not every single case, but the average of the data set shows you make more over your life with a college degree than without one. So it's very important that we try to kind of cast the widest net and try to get as many people as possible. And I believe, which is why my work so much focuses on high school, is that that's before they cross that graduation stage.
This is so fascinating to me. We could probably do a whole nother podcast just on the trust and like dependency that you were talking about that goes into consumers in a digital age. It's just, my mind is spinning thinking like, man, that's why people don't check in with their money as often as they used to, because they're so trusting in all of these apps that they have on their phone and the technology that manages it for them. I mean, that's just wild. But because we do actually have to close the podcast up here. Oh. I know we could go on forever, but I want to know more about your book, Mind Your Money. I want to know a little bit about who is the book for, because I feel like your concepts, you know, transcend generations, but who was this book created for? And tell us a little bit about what's in it.
Yes. Okay. So the book is really created for somebody who is for the first time considering personal finance and financial literacy aspects of their own life. Mm-hmm. So that means if you are now considering getting started investing, you've never invested before, great book for you. If you are just now considering opening a bank account, you've never had one before, great book for you, right? It's that first time experience. And it really focuses on the fundamental pillars of money. So we don't go into a ton of details or go in the weeds about insurance products or taxes and different things like that. We just focus on the banking, the mindset around money, so the psychology of money. We talk a lot about budgeting in there, investing. I really wanted to make sure it was really those main pillars that everyday people really need to grasp before moving on to some of the more challenging or more complex or nuanced areas of personal finance. And for me, I wanted to do it in a way that was different, because I've read dozens and dozens and dozens of personal finance books, because I started nerding out about money when I had my own credit card debacle and I needed to pay off $20,000 of credit card debt. So I started reading books about money, and I read all the Susie Orman and all the David Box and J.L. Collins. I mean, I read all the books, and I loved all the personal finance books I read, but I felt like a lot of them were written by people that have no understanding of my experiences and my personal stories growing up with immigrant parents who don't speak English, who never had bank accounts, who were always cash first, cash only in my household, and really understanding what it's like to be in a household with parents that are not really prepared for retirement. And so you sort of are their retirement plan. And so being sort of like in that sandwich generation situation where you're thinking about future generations, but you're also taking care of the previous generation while trying to manage your own personal finances and plan for your own retirement one day, you know, it's a lot. So I wanted to make sure to give a little bit of like hope to the people that see themselves in this situation like me, where maybe they're feeling hopeless, like it's impossible. But if I was able to, with just learning about financial literacy and empowering myself and becoming very passionate, changing my mindset, changing my behaviors, and understanding, like, you know, what I call like those pillars of financial literacy, I was able to really change my trajectory and help a lot of the people in my family too. I'm not saying you have to become a millionaire overnight. You know, some will, many won't, but that's not necessary to have financial success. It's just a matter of being in control of the money that you do have. So I wanted my book to really be personal stories and personal finance, not just the financial stuff without that personal touch.
And then lastly, for everybody else that's like, hey, this is great, because I applaud your work and I want, you have, you know, the side of you that really wants to make this impact, you know, globally with all of the young adults, young students out there. If somebody just wanted to support, get involved in your movement, how do they get in contact with you? How do they join you?
Yes. Okay. So you can find me on social media anywhere at Miss Be Helpful, M-I-S-S-B-E Helpful. That could be Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, wherever. And just reach out and let me know that you want to get involved in financial education advocacy. The key is advocacy, because at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot that can be done, like tweeting your local representatives, writing letters to the senators who sit on your Senate Education Committee for your state, testifying for a bill that's up for a vote to become legislation. There's a lot of steps in the process getting this work done. And the more people who get involved, the more likely this work is to be successful. So there's only 22 states right now in 2023, in July of 2023, that require a full semester of personal finance, which means more states don't require it than the number of states that do. So we got a lot of work to do, and there's always a way to help. So just reach out to me and connect with me on whatever social media platform of your choice. You can also reach out via email. missbehelpful@gmail.com is my email. And then I can let you know where it kind of makes the most sense to plug in and support the financial education advocacy movement.
That was simply awesome, Janelle. Thank you so much for sharing your passion. Mm-hmm. Super exciting to hear that. I think there's no doubt that you get to all 50 states here in the very near future. Super appreciate you being with us. I hope that people were moved by this. I hope that people will take action, either get a copy of the book if you're in the space where you are starting that journey. And if you feel like you're beyond that, reach out, pitch in and help, because more people need to know financial literacy so that they can connect with their money. We can start to create more abundance in this country and in the entire world. I don't know how we top this episode. We'll have to give it a shot next week. Janelle, thank you so much for being with us. You are fantastic. Everybody else, you were fantastic too. You were great listeners. We appreciate your attention today. We'll be back again next week with a brand new edition of the None of Your Business podcast.